it was Free Mandela. In 2007, it's like Free Mumia. Oprah opens up a school for girls, that's dope. We don't like George Bush, but black folks don't vote. We use the word nigga and we don't think twice. Then we get all upset when it's used by whites. Dope, guns and hoes is part of the rap game, and it's just entertainment how it's often explained. Trust.
Welcome to Voices from the Front Lines. I am Damon Azali Rojas. This is 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, KPFK. Also 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara and streaming on the web for the world, www.kpfk.org. We got a great show for you today. Trying to push back against the police state. We just heard millions of dollars going to build a police station downtown. We don't need it. So what we're doing today, we got three guests lined up. The first one is around the anti-gang legislation that's currently being discussed in the House of Representatives. Two very different bills, one about prevention and intervention, the other one about suppression and eradication, are up on the table, and we're going to have Jason Zeidenberg, the executive director of the Justice Policy Institute in Washington, D.C., talking to us. For our second segment, we're going to be having Ajamu Baraka, which is with the U.S. Human Rights Network, and he's going to be talking about internally displaced person status for black folks in regards to the post-Katrina and Rita displacement of black folks out of New Orleans and the Gulf Coast. And finally, we're going to be talking to Barbara Bicknell, who is a co-author with Stan Tookie Williams, who was killed by the state almost 2 years ago, and they're re-releasing his book called Blue Rage, Black Redemption. And I'll be talking to her about that and her relationship and fight to stop the death penalty. So we'll be right back in a second. Hello, hello, hello. Welcome back, Damon. It's been a minute for you to be in this room, missing the listeners. But we have a good show to keep you excited today on your Monday afternoon commute. So for our first guest, we have Jason Zeidenberg on the line. Welcome, Jason, to the show.
Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, so there's a lot of movement going on in relation to legislation on both the Senate and the House level and the federal government. I recently just read over the weekend a policy paper that you put out called Gang Wars, the Failure of Enforcement Tactics and the Need for Effective Public Safety Strategies. So I want to start with there. In it, there's a couple of things that are pretty fly in the face of what you normally would hear around gangs. And one of them is that there are actually fewer gang members in the U.S. today than there were a decade ago. There is no evidence that gang activity is growing. Secondly, the public face of the gang problem is a black and brown, but whites make up the largest group of adolescent gang members. So this is kind of opposite of what you see in the media, right?
Yeah, absolutely. The first thing that I think it's really important to talk about in terms of this report, this is a national report that looks at a lot of national surveys. So this may not reflect the experience of every single community in Los Angeles, in the Los Angeles basin or other parts of California. I really do want to be clear about that. But for the things that you've mentioned, first of all, the hyper-racialization of the media portrayal of gangs and youth crime, and second, the overestimation of gang involvement in crime, I think those are true for the L.A. Basin as well. Probably not the same as it is for the rest of the country, but it is true for the L.A. Basin as well.
Well, I think that's important, though, when you're talking about how it's, you know, L.A. is seen as the hub of gang activity, et cetera, et cetera. But I think when you actually have this sampling across the country and you're seeing the same things pop up, I mean, I guess I would ask you, what would be one of the most important things for you to actually talk to our listeners about in relation for them to understand about how to actually stop violence in the community? What's the key thing that most people just aren't aware of?
The key thing that I think most people aren't aware of is that the gang suppression activities that have been played out in Los Angeles, Chicago, and some other cities, they just haven't been shown to work to reduce the violence, period. End of statement. So bigger investments in policing, bigger investments in prisons, that's not the solution to gang crime. That's not the solution to public safety. And the really scary thing about what's going on in Washington, D.C. right now is that in response to some of the serious problems that do exist in Los Angeles and other cities, they basically want to take the worst things from L.A.'s war on gangs and make it national as part of national policy. I think that's the most important thing that people need to understand, is that the various types of suppression activities, gang databases, flooding the streets with police, special gang task forces, none of them have been shown to be particularly effective at reducing gang crime.
I mean, when you talk about L.A., you have Rampart scandal, you have a consent decree, you have a gang squad that was disbanded. Why is L.A., with all its failures, put forth as the model? Like, who is doing that?
Well, your politicians are, or I should say our politicians, but I'm very much speaking about
the politicians.
Let's call the politicians. The politicians, including some people from the L.A. delegation. I think that there's a couple of things going on. Number one, law enforcement, whether you agree or not, whether they deserve this amount of money or not, are trying to get more money out of the federal government. It's a very complicated story, but basically through state budget crisis and then county budget crisis, there's less money to spend at the local level. So law enforcement, while they still get a lion's share of the funds, they're feeling a bit of that squeeze.
And they're trying to get that money through kind of anti-terrorism stuff?
All, you name it, they're trying to get it through.
So whatever it is.
Three or four different crime bills that call for a big federal funding stream for law enforcement. So they've been very vocal about the gang problem, as has people that are concerned about advancing more money for prevention and for job training. So there's no question that there's a need for money for some response to violence and some response to gangs. The question is what? The question is, and will it work or not? So one of the things that's driving this debate right now is a couple of elected officials from the L.A. Basin are saying that give us one of these gang bills, we'll make it a balanced approach, we'll make it suppression, but also intervention and prevention, and this will help ameliorate the problem. And the major bills that have been promoted by people from California, the Feinstein Gang Abatement Act and the Gang Abatement Act being pushed by Congressman Adam Schiff, you know, in both cases, this balanced approach is really not all that balanced. And it's really just going to be another vehicle for putting more money into things that haven't worked at the local level in terms of law enforcement and federalizing a whole series of crimes so that the state of California and Los Angeles taxpayers don't have to pay the full freight of incarcerating somebody in the state system.
So they're basically, this is kind of part of the whole thousands of more crimes since 1984 and the rise of kind of the construction of prisons. There's been these lots of different laws. So you're saying that basically in a effort to get more money, they're trying to basically take the price tag and give it to the federal government.
Yeah, I mean, the fact that it costs upwards of $30,000 a year to incarcerate somebody in California, and the fact that California's state budget is really restrained these days, that isn't lost on California federal politicians. The fact that we're creating wide definitions of gang crimes, which could see a federalization of gang crime and youth crime in a way that we haven't seen before, means that we will be able to put people into the federal prison system that once could only go into the California state prison system, federalizing a whole series of crimes that really weren't meant to be federal. And what that means is instead of that being part of California's $100 billion budget to pay for the incarceration of those people, it goes into the federal system's $1 trillion budget in which prisons are just a tiny, tiny, tiny part of it. So we can build lots of new federal prisons. In the state of California, where they are building more prisons, the fact that it's going to cost $10 billion isn't lost on anybody, and it's a big political debate. So that is one of the things driving this as well.
And it seems to me would actually reduce the quote-unquote overcrowding by taking people out of state prisons and federalizing their crimes and putting them in federal prisons.
It certainly could. Nobody talks about it in those ways. But if you look at what's happening in the debate around prisons in California, while we're not necessarily winning every single politician over, we have one public opinion. public doesn't like the prison bond that passed, or the prison deal that was passed in the legislature this year. It was passed by politicians.
Yeah, I mean, the again, thing about that was from Schwarzenegger from before tried to pass it, pulled it off because there wasn't support, and then the Democrats basically passed it through the House.
Yeah, as far as I'm concerned, the federal gang initiatives are just another easy way to sort of latch prisons on to funding streams that will allow them to exist at the level that they exist at, rather than having them be on the freight of state budgets, which can't actually afford them at the same level. And then you actually do have police wanting money for policing at the local level to come out of the federal budget, and you have people that want prevention. The two bills, I think, give a sharp contrast, if you want to talk about those for a minute.
Yeah, actually, I have one question, just one thought before that, because I know, you know, after the rebellions in Los Angeles, there was this whole proposal about weed and seed, and what folks don't know, weed and seed was this whole thing of like, well, we're going to come in with the heavy policing and get rid of the bad seeds, the elements that are detracting, and then we're going to basically feed the community with programs, with intervention, all these different things. And I think that what we have seen, we actually got helped, were one of the groups that helped defeat it in LA back then. But I think what we've seen the continuing is, it's the balanced approach, but then it always is on the suppression piece, and it never gets to the other one because it's kind of a bottomless pit of funding. So I guess moving on, the two pieces that are on there is the Scott bill, mm-hmm. and then there is the Schiff bill.
Right.
They're both, it seems like they're two different things coming out of the Democratic Party as like the proponents of Democratic senators and whatnot and House
right.
of Representatives. Where, tell me about the differences of them.
Well, one bill is still very much a reflective of the punitive policies of the past. The Schiff bill certainly does have prevention funding, but it also has a broad definition of gang crime that's so broad that we're worried it'll sweep in, you know, hundreds of thousands of young people into the federal system one way or another through arrests, and maybe they'll end up in the system. It's got a gang database, and gang databases have always been shown to have a punitive impact on communities of color, even though crime is an equal opportunity profession in this country. It's got life without parole for young people. And in particular, the Schiff bill is most likely to get melded with the Feinstein bill. And the Feinstein bill has even got less money for prevention and is even more punitive. So that's one approach. The other approach is the Scott bill, the Promise Act. That is what we are calling the All Prevention Gang Bill. There's a tiny little bit of money in there that is for some sort of law enforcement study. Other than that, it's money that's designed for sort of cradle to adulthood investments in prevention and interventions, including research into trying to deal with the very, very hard questions about how we help young people leave gangs, particularly if they've been in gangs for a number of years. So here's the question I would put to people in the basin. If law enforcement, if elected officials have been jumping up and down the last year saying they need more money for prevention and intervention, why shouldn't they be supporting the one bill that does that? And why do we keep having to have these other bills that talk about the quote-unquote balanced approach based on the LA model? I don't see much balance there.
Well, it actually seems like the second bill you're talking about from Scott, it just almost seems like you're sleeping and dreaming, because you never hear anything that is even remotely focusing on prevention and intervention.
Well, here's the key thing, though. We've had people coming to Washington to testify about gangs. And every time they come testify about gangs, they could be the most conservative law enforcement figure, the most conservative politician. They're all saying the same thing. We need a balance between suppression, prisons and policing, prevention, helping young people before they end up in the system, and interventions when young people make a mistake or get involved in crime. We've got services and ways of helping them out. Every single person that's come to Washington to testify on gangs from California has said that. I guess the question being raised by the Scott Act is, maybe we've put enough money into prisons and policing, maybe we should just put some money and some resources into only prevention and intervention and see what happens, because we've tried the balanced approach and it hasn't really worked.
Right. So in relation to that, with the last couple minutes here, they're both, you know, introduced by Democratic legislators.
Mm-hmm.
Where is the Democratic Party in terms of supporting either one of these? And then where are the Republicans?
There are some Republicans that are not happy with a federal involvement in gang policy. They generally are people that say, you know what, federal government shouldn't be involved in this. These are state issues. Even the prevention side of it's a state issue. And when the gang czar for California testified in Congress, conservative Congressman Dan Lundgren put him on the stand, basically, and said, I need to understand exactly why the federal government needs to be involved with this at all. So that's the Republicans. On the Democratic side, you have big city Democrats that, to some degree or another, are feeling the heat about real life crimes that are happening in real communities, and also feeling a push by law enforcement and a push by local elected officials, and being told, we need a gangs bill to be able to get some resources back to these communities. So that's certainly one really strong tension within the Democratic Party. Then there's another tension within the Democratic Party that says, you know what? There is more than 2 million people locked up in this country. We put more money into law enforcement, put more money into suppression than we have into these other domains of public safety. Maybe we should try this other approach. So I am not current on the count for these bills, but I believe that there's about 30 congresspeople that have signed up in support of the Promise Act, and something similar to the number of people that have signed up in support of Schiff's bill. And I think what we really need to see in this party is to see people stand up for what they know to actually work and support a bill that might actually do that.
So, Jason, why don't you tell us, but just before we go to the next guest, tell us where folks can actually get a copy of the report that you put out.
You can get a copy of the report on our website, which is justicepolicy.org. And there's one other thing that I think is really important about this,
okay, if
you don't mind me mentioning.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about at the beginning sort of the hyper-racialization of the gang issue, which has almost been entirely done through the lens of pop culture focusing in on L.A., I think. The bottom line, and this is really important because it's as true in a community that is majority people of color as it would be true anywhere else in the United States, most young people go through some sort of adolescent juvenile crime phase. And indeed, something like a third of young boys engage in something that would be called a violent crime. Most young people leave that life behind them. And the difference is making sure that we can intervene in young people's lives to help those kids who don't leave the life behind them naturally. And that's where we should be focusing our efforts. The research in our report is very clear. Most young people who are in a gang leave the gang. For most young people, it's less than a year's experience, and then another huge number drop off after a year or two. We want young people to leave gangs as quickly as possible, period. Gang life is not necessarily good for a whole variety of life outcomes. We know that most of the suppression stuff, most of the heavy-handed policing, the gang databases, this can actually extend young people's involvement in gangs because it makes it harder for them to leave, makes it harder for them to get back into school, makes it harder for them to pick up the social capital that people need to move on from adolescence. So I guess the issue in terms of the hyper-racialization of this issue is, what's going on with the white gang problem in the United States? And why is it that we're not seeing a similar response to that problem that we're seeing with bills like this?
Jason, I think you brought up a really good point, because I think a lot of times when we really kind of almost, I think sometimes in the people in the movement or in grassroots organizations or, you know, pro-justice organizations, a lot of times think that society has the desire to actually have equality for everybody. And I think the more that I hear what's going on, it merely makes me think that actually, no, that it doesn't actually want to have equality for everybody. And particularly when you have, I think I read this, it's a combination from reading your report, and I just saw what folks haven't seen it, Bastards of the Party, which is a movie that was talked about the history of gangs in Los Angeles when it basically came out of the Black Panthers and the US organization. Yeah. And really understanding it as that was, it was a result of basically white racism. And it was about Black students, Black youth coming together because they were getting rocks thrown at them, they were getting beat up every day. And when we don't look at it in that context and see it as this is a separate time and whatever that doesn't have any connection, then I think people don't understand that there's actually this trend to do put certain people, certain groups of people in certain places. And we look at 2.3 million in prison, almost a million of them are Black, 500,000 are Latino. What's important is to actually focus on the race piece, because so many times if you just focus on the class, it loses it. It becomes invisible.
Sure, absolutely. I want to know what we can do to help young people leave gangs. I don't think we should, you know, I don't think we should demonize people when they're in gangs. I think that's completely the wrong approach. But, you know, there's other things people want to do in life. Let's help them get there. Everything we're doing through the suppression prism is making it harder for the vast majority of young people who are in gangs to leave gangs. If it doesn't work, why do we keep doing this? If people want to take action, they should call Congressman Schiff's office and tell him to withdraw his bill.
And Congressman Schiff is a congressperson for where?
I believe Pasadena.
Pasadena.
Sorry.
All the popular things come from around here, unfortunately.
Yeah, well, Congressman Schiff actually developed a fairly good funding stream for juvenile prevention services in California when he was a state elected official. This is not that. This is a mainly punitive bill with some prevention to dress it up. He should withdraw this bill and let the Scott bill move through.
Okay. So last question I got for you. Our police chief here, or say the police chief here, the police chief here in Los Angeles, William Braddon, was formerly of New York. Mm-hmm. And I know since he left, as well as Giuliani has left, then we have seen the decrease in terms of gangs and gang violence and stuff in New York. Can you speak a little bit about what made that happen?
Sure. It actually precedes both of those fine people. Basically, New York just tracked very differently than other cities in their responses to gangs. During the 1960s and 1950s, actually, there were serious gang problems in New York City, and the response wasn't sending in the police, sending more kids to prison in droves. It was instead a social work response to provide resources in the communities that were most affected by crime to work with gangs and work with gang members and in some cases recruit gang members into sort of a social work response to the gang problem, find young people's jobs, make it easier for young people to get into schools and get into education. New York still does have gangs, but no seasoned New Yorker would say that New York doesn't have gangs. But New York has avoided what has occurred, say, in Los Angeles and to some degree in Chicago, which is the institutionalization of the gang problem, where today Condoleezza Rice's organization, the Advancement Project, correctly says Los Angeles has a large, burgeoning gang problem. We shouldn't deny that. The issue is, how did we get here? We got here by doing suppression, suppression, suppression. So when Condoleezza Rice says Los Angeles seems to be stuck on stupid, I think that's something that the rest of the country needs to pay attention to as well as people in Los Angeles. And if that's actually the case, why don't we invest in something different for a while and see what happens?
All right. Thank you, Jason Zeidenberg from the Justice Policy Institute. We're going to leave it there. Thank you for being on the show.
Thank you for having me.
And we'll talk to you next time. We're going to go to a quick break and be back with our next guest. This is KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara. See you in a minute.